First Baptist Church of Redmond, October 28, 2018. Guest speaker, Missionary Mike Bradley.
Thank you so much for being so kind and gracious as we have been here. I've been here for about 3 weeks, visiting four different churches, letting them know what's going on in England. And I think I have forgotten, but I do realize that just face-to-face, having fun together, not necessarily just being parts of a service, although that's important as well. You know, you connect with people, and we pray more for people that we know and we remember. And I didn't want to come on this trip because it's just been a rapid pace this last 5 years, but it's important that I'm here. And I'll probably be making, since I've been gone for 5 years, I'll be making a few more short trips throughout different places in the United States to catch up with people. Some of you know the Bradleys a little bit, some not at all, and that is fine. Just like to give you a little bit of an update. Now, I haven't done this for any congregation, but I want you to see how we really look like in England. So let's see if this will cooperate. Yeah, I have my top hat on, and there's in my sitting room. There's my wife there. Very, very proper, not dressed quite as casual as you do here in Seattle. Yeah, there's my daughter there with her military husband, and there's the latest grandson there to the right. Here we are. There's our family all together. And there's my grandson number one. So that's the appropriate attire for how we dress in the culture there in the motherland. But obviously this was a dress-up time, but I thought I'd have a little bit of fun with that. But anyway, there's my daughter. Right behind her is my daughter-in-law, Harriet. And that's my wife to the right, and she loves those big hats. Do you ladies like those big hats? Sort of. Guess you have to be in the right place. And then that's obviously me with the gruff look there, like a Scrooge with the tall hat. And then my son, Michael, and then my son-in-law, Chandon, there in the military. He wanted to have that British military attire on. But anyway, that's our family, and then that's my little grandson, Dennis. Rupert Bradley the first. There'll be no second. He's quite a handful. So we have been in England now for going on 20 years in 2019. We moved there in June of 1999. Seems like a long time ago. And we've just been faithfully, we're part of ABWE, the Association of Baptists for World Evangelization. As far as our team or our group that's there, we have about 14 or 18 now, if we want to include our little children as well. So we're in several different areas, but these are the areas where I have been in. When I first moved to England about almost 20 years ago, we were in Bristol, which is the chief city in the southwest, and we were part of several different teams, two different church plants. But our goal is either to start or do church replants, if you would, but to grow the congregations to where they can afford their own British ministers. So there are two churches that were left behind there in Bristol, but I was just a little bit of it. And that was my introduction to British culture and all of that. And then after about a year and a half, so this would have been about the early 2000s, we moved to a town called Swindon. I think Swindon. It literally means pig on the hill. So lovely. But it was the fastest growing city in all of Europe. And the whole north, they were just building thousands and thousands of homes. And there was a small group of believers who bought houses. They lived in the city center. They bought houses in this new area wanting to do a church plant, but they couldn't find any British pastor to help them. And that's how God brought our paths together. They were dire for leadership. They were like probably, I'm just trying to think, there was some construction people that were high up in that. There were others that were like not quite CEOs, but just below that, but just really interesting people from different parts of society, but it's like they were all evangelists, and they really wanted to reach their own people. And so when our family and another couple joined them, they even put us on trial for about, I think it was 6 months. They weren't sure if Americans could do this thing. So that was our interesting. But the church there in Swindon, it was graduated. They had their own British pastor. I think it's about 100 plus, which is a good-sized congregation for the United Kingdom. And about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, they planted a second church called Cornerstone because that whole region continues to grow. And so there's another church plant. I don't think they're maybe in their 40s, but there's still a possibility of that mother church. They would like to plant still another church because of the growth. So a lot of what we would like to do, we don't want to be the Tonto or the Johnny Wayne that comes, and we do it to be part of a church planting movement to where we can encourage, be part of it, but it's more British-led. That's what our goal is, to be an extension of, if you would, British evangelical churches. And we're seeing that accomplished in the Swindon area. And then we moved over to that one that's just above London. You can't see London, but that was Milton Keynes. And so while we're in the midst of that, our ABW staff, they keep pushing the Bradley family out. They said, oh, another opportunity. But then that became the fastest growing city in all of the UK. And interestingly, it's built, I think the last time I was here, I may have told some of you who remember us a little bit about Milton Keynes. It's actually designed on a West Coast city-style grid. So as a city, it's a town. You can't be a city unless you have a cathedral or a university. It doesn't have either of those. So it's still Milton Keynes town at the moment. But it's about, I think, 300 to 350,000. So I'm guessing, but it's grown from 1967 when it was just pastures. It was a planned city, very much of a U.S. idea with the grid system. They were very proud of modeling it after a West Coast USA type of a grid system, and other things were part of that. But that church is about 100. That's where we were for about 8 or 9 years, and they have their own British pastor, and they're in a key area of Milton Keynes. We were part of an association called the Fellowship of Independent Evangelical Churches, which is a British association of about 500 plus churches, and they were really keen to do a church plant in that city, but they had 3 fails, and so when we were part of that, they were excited to kind of take over and put all the way a church plant in that city. So that's Milton Keynes, and that's where we were for about 8 years, and that's where we were perhaps the last time we were here. And then we went way up into the south, to the north, and during probably about 10 years, 12 years ago, just in a conference with British, it was a British-led conference, church planters and all of that, but it was an evangelist who I grew to like, and just in one of his presentations, he just said, if you would like to do church planting in the UK, most of it is on the bottom one-third of England. If you want to be courageous, go north. The further north you go, including Scotland, the further north you go, the less Christian workers there are, and the less evangelical churches there are in the north. So when we were coming to the conclusion of Milton Keynes, I began to inquire further north. And there is the north-south divide, just as there's probably East Coast, West Coast divide here in the USA. And there used to be if you're East Coast, there's a north-south divide. So even as I was beginning to talk with my secular friends as well as my Christian friends, they would say, does God really want you to go to the north? Have you ever visited the north? Do you know how cold it is in the north? And then the big one is, talked about this in the Sunday school hour, said, can you even understand how they talk in the north? But interestingly, as the north-south from an East Coast side, the northerners on the East Coast tend to be a little bit less friendly. And then often we talk about southern hospitality and all of that. If you're down in the southern, Tennessee, Georgia, all of those areas. Well, it's reverse in England. The southerners, which I didn't know this until I moved up into the northeast, tend to be a bit more stuffy. My daughter would say they're a bit more plasticky down in the south. There's an awful lot about your status. They have no class system, but they have a class system. And if you live in an attached house, or do you live in a detached house, or do you live in a house that all... And if you have a second car, is it a sporty? Is it a Audi TT? That was the hot one. Probably it's moved on from that. So it was always how you lived, what your status was, the perks in your company. Very like plastic. A lot of putting on appearances, which is a BBC television show. In the north, that was traditionally for centuries the working class lived in the north. And they were just down-to-earth people. People say, well, they party hard. They are drunk more often than the southerners. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but they're down-to-earth, earthy people. They'll talk to anyone in the streets. We're in the south. They hear my accent. They'll look to the ground. In the north, they actually kind of like Americans a little bit. So anyway, it was a huge curve as we were beginning to reestablish ourselves. We've been there just about 5 years now. I got to remind myself what my next... So Sunderland is a city of about 300,000, so it's substantial. There's Sunderland, Newcastle, and then after that, there's just smaller little villages and towns until you would get to the Scottish border, and then Edinburgh and Glasgow would be the big city centers up in Scotland. So just a few pictures. The North Sea is right there, just as you have a Pacific Ocean. Football or soccer, that's our little team there. And sadly, they're no longer in the Premier League, and there's only a few of you that will understand that. But we've been relegated down. But they still have 40,000 people that will come out to games, even though they're a lower... So they really, really love their football. Pensure Monument. Have you ever heard the word folly? That's folly. Probably does, maybe a little bit comes into our language here. But a folly is something that really is not significant. Well, that's a folly. Pensure was a titled person who lived in the 1800s, and before he died, he wanted to build this building, which is very beautiful, kind of looks a bit Greekish or Romanish, Italian, whichever, and it's nothing. But it's a beautiful place. We'll walk up to it. They light it up, but it's a folly. A folly is a building that really has no purpose except for its Pincher Monument. So, you know, that was 200 years ago, and we still know who Pincher is. But a folly is that right there. But it's quite big, and we hike up to that. There's just a nighttime picture. Just a few bits about Sunderland. It became a little village, if you would, in 1179. It was chartered as a fishing village. So that's its very origin. So you think about it, that's a long time ago. We're talking about a couple thousand or 1,000 years. That little river, that last picture, that more ships have been built in that little river. Ours is the Wear River than any other location in the world to date. So many, many tonnage of cargo vessels, as well as military vessels and everything in between. So that's very much a part of our history, is the shipbuilding and all of the fine trades that are part of that, from working with wood to working with metal and all the outfitting of it. We also traded in coal and salt, and still we sit on a mega load of coal that's right below our feet. When you buy houses, we were able to purchase a house there. Before the bank makes the mortgage and all that official, they have to see if there's any tunnels underneath their house so your house doesn't collapse. So it's all over the place. They even went 5 miles out underneath the North Sea, and they were pulling coal out of that. The Nissan factory, and I'll explain that in just a moment, in 1985, the whole north of England, but specifically the northeast, was gutted when the government, which is a socialist government, they closed down the shipping industry and the coal mines almost at the same time during the Thatcher-Reagan time. So they're not fans of Margaret Thatcher in the northeast at all. But if you could imagine, for perhaps great-great-grandfather, you had someone who either worked in the coal mines, and so you worked in the coal mines, or a great-great-grandfather that worked on, you know, clipper ships, or even more newer, just in a matter of just a few years, it was all done and dusted. The shipping industry went somewhere else in the EU, and then the coal mining went somewhere else in the world. But all of those families, and so from 1985, or middle of the 80s forward, the whole northeast of England, not just Sunderland, had been trying to redefine themselves. And you think about all that, the utter unemployment that would just gut a hole. Even though it was a socialist country, people would still get just a pittance of what they would have been accustomed to in their salaries. So that's kind of the backdrop. The Northerners are hardy people. They're hardworking people, worked in some of the trades that are not unfamiliar with areas in the United States. But when that stopped, when the rug was pulled out, it made a huge difference. And drinking and all that really began, because they would just drown a lot of their problems away. And the only caveat that we got, or they got, from the UK government was the Nissan factory relocated a brand new factory right there in Sunderland that employs about 7,000, which is nothing if you think about there's 300,000 people. But then there are other little companies that would also feed Nissan with parts, etc. So that is our biggest employer. And it is a good job, as that any kind of car factory here in the U.S., that would be a good steady income that a mom or dad could have to provide for their family. Just some other interesting bits here. You know, spiritually, Celtic Christianity or Celtic Christianity, depending on how you want to pronounce that, from 500 A.D., the beginning of Christianity as we have received here in the U.S. began just above Sunderland on that little island called Holy Island of Lindisfarne. But Irish monks who were evangelical began on that little island to train other people and send missionaries, if you would, from as far back as 500 A.D. throughout the north of England, which eventually would affect the south of England, which, if you would think about it, would have affected the Puritans and all those who came across to the United States, as well as the beginning of modern missions in the 1800s. So it's got a unique little spot right there in Christian history. For those of you that have an entire Bible, this is a songbook, but with it's all put together, that began in Sunderland, our little Church of England church, the idea of putting all the epistles and the Gospels and the Old Testament together in one book, that happened right there in that town as well. Just a few names that may be of interest, and once again, I'll read these and then you'll forget about it, but St. Aidan was an Irish missionary who came from Ireland, actually came from Iona, another significant little island within the context of Christian history, came over to Lindisfarne, or Holy Island, and that's where he began, kind of like a Billy Graham, both personally and then training others, and they were extremely devout, but with an evangelical flavor. St. Cuthbert, who was another man who was on that island, I went to where he was buried. So that was, I think he's like 1100, I need to double check. But 1100, and they still honor where he was buried all of these years. The Venerable Bede, the English language that we know today, many, 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 many years ago, centuries and centuries and centuries ago, this very godly man who was probably a genius, he also began to put down the English language. That's the beginning point. So if you study linguistics regarding our English or American, however you want to, it goes all the way back to this godly man who was a preacher. And he also lived on Lindisfarne. So a lot of unique history spiritually that's right within an hour or so from the doorstep of where we live. A little bit more in a modern, although the first isn't terribly modern. D.L. Moody, that would be a name that I know some of you would recognize. He was an evangelist. He was just a godly man in the city of Chicago, went through all the world. But he stopped and had revival meetings in Sunderland in the late 1800s. Billy Graham, I know people have different opinions regarding Billy Graham. He, in the 1980s, 84, he had a campaign that went over and over and over. And just 4 weeks ago, meeting with some pastors, you know, that pastor became a Christian in the 1984 revival meetings of Billy Graham, or evangelistic meetings that was in our local football stadium or soccer stadium. So a lot of neat little history in that northeast of England. The north is very different than the south. People will be a little bit harder, but they'll talk about it. We're down in the south, they're hard, and you know, Christianity is a bit of an antique. So it's good for Mike, his family, but really not keen. So different total canvas of which we pull from. Oh, before that goes, hold on, will I stop it? Yeah, let me go back. I'll let that come back up here and go forward, because that's a video clip. I just wanted to say just a few comments. So when we left in 2012, 2013 to go to the Northeast, there was a city center church who said, can you come and help us? They had a mission hall, so a separate building out in a different estate, actually one of the worst areas of the Sunderland area. And they said, if you'll come up, we'll allow you to just take this church and grow it to independence. So for our first 2.25 years, we worked in Ford Mission. And if those of you who may follow our prayer letters, if Ford Mission sounds familiar, that's where we were about 2+ years ago. But at the conclusion, they really didn't want to love the people in Ford Estate. We put lots and lots of pamphlets out to invite people to children's clubs, to adults. But every time people would come, none of the core people would come. And in fact, they would talk about Mike and June being liars, and that we didn't do it like this in the 1980s. And they were like stuck in a certain era of that's how you do church, and we cannot support Mike and June and what they're doing. So we took the high road, and we had many discussions to try to like right the path so we could be on the same page. And in the end, they just didn't want to budge. And so we just decided it would be better for us to move on. So we gave them a 2-month notice, and fighting and all that. Perhaps it's someone else's place to take that church to independence. But in January, 2.5 years ago, we just came to a friendly conclusion. And I didn't know what we would do next, but as I was going into the parking lot, there were some others who we had reached during our 2.25 years, who said, you know, they wanted to be part of church planting, and they were disappointed as well that the people were very stodgy, if you would, and didn't want to go forward. And so within just a few minutes, they said, "What are you doing next Sunday?" And I didn't want to interrupt their church going, and I didn't want them to come over because they liked a personality, and obviously that's part of pastors and missionaries and all of that. So I said, "You come over next Sunday afternoon," and it was a time that wouldn't interrupt whatever their church allegiance would be, and we'll just begin to pray. And that became from one family to about 14 or so who said, "We would like to partner with you to do another church planting." Well, I hadn't planned on any of this. I just wanted to finish well and then find out what God wanted us to do. And so God gave us those people, and then the local people from Ford Mission that we had connected to through a cafe that we had started. Several of them said, "So there's no cafe on Friday. What are we going to do?" So I looked at my wife and she said, "Yes." So we decided to move the cafe to our house, and we've been doing that for about 2-3 years since. So we had no idea about any of that. We associated with Bethany City Church, which was another city center church in Sunderland, who were reaching the homeless, who were reaching mostly Muslim-speaking people who were moving into the area and wanted to see if they could come in as refugees and eventually become British citizens, who were reaching out to the university students. I mean, I thought that's what a local church should be doing, who were feeding who were providing food through a food bank. And obviously, it was many meetings just kind of talking with their staff, and eventually said, "You know, we would like to be part of a church planting movement. That's why we're here." I let them know all of the history, where we had been there in Sunderland. And so it's like a quick shift forward. And just before I came, I interviewed 3 different people, and I actually learned some things that I didn't know. So Mike and June's name comes up quite a bit, but I didn't pay them for any of that. But what I want you to see, how God was preparing our family to be part of another church where they were praying for a worker. And then hopefully that will give you enough of the in-between without talking much further to where what is going to come will make sense to you. So we'll see if we can do this one more time. Let me get through this one. It does. There we go. So this should be volume. Okay. It could be loud enough.
My name's Dave Burke. I'm the pastor of Bethany City Church in Sunderland, which is a town of about 300,000 inhabitants on the North Sea coast of northeastern England. And our church is right in the centre of the city. And we were planted from a church about 6 miles away 14 years ago. And we were delighted, actually, when Mike and June came and joined us for a while, because we were looking to plant elsewhere in the city of Sunderland, or perhaps just outside. And when Mike and June rolled up, they answered a question we had, which was, who can help us to do this? And over a period of time, we got to know them. And Mike and June asked if they could be accountable to us, which we were delighted to do. And so since that time, really, Mike and June have humbly and quietly got on with the work of replanting, really, a church in a small settlement on the western edge of Sunderland called Shiny Row. It's a strategic settlement because it's at the intersection of several busy roads, so it's a strategic place to be. And like Sunderland itself, it's quite a deprived place. So there are a lot of families where unemployment is embedded and part of life. We've really enjoyed working with Mike and June. They're good friends, but also they've taken a lot of time and trouble to understand British culture, which is as strange to you as American culture is to us. And although we speak the same language, there are so many differences. But Mike and June have really embedded themselves in our culture and our world with humility and with real enthusiasm. And we love working with them. And we're looking forward to what the future holds as Shiny Road Church grows, which it has been doing and continues to grow. And our church is growing partnership together.
Hi, my name's Jeff. I'm an elder at Bethany City Church in Sunderland. And Mike Bradley is a great friend of ours. Mike came to us a few years ago and gelled with Mike straight away. And initially as a church, we had a vision to replant again in the city. We came about 20 years ago into Sunderland as a church plant. And part of our ethos had always been to replant a church. And it never really happened. But when we met Mike, we realised Mike had a heart for planting and a heart for building new churches. And we straight away gelled with this man and with Junie's wife. And so when we found that Mike had an opportunity at St. John's in Shiny Row to replant a small fellowship, which is pretty much on its last legs, we're so encouraged just to be part of Mike's support network, if you like. And so that's what we try to do with Mike, to support him in St. John's, which is about 4 or 5 miles away from the city centre. And we just love what's going on up there. It's just been amazing to see how the church has just grown from probably a handful, 4 or 5 folks that were left there, into a good congregation now of 40, 45 now on a Sunday evening. And Mike has just been such a blessing to us. We've just seen him put his energy and great work levels into just getting this church fellowship up and running. And the people have responded in a lovely way, and there's been new folks added, and it's just been a real blessing to see the work develop there.
In 2015, there was only 7 members in our church, and we were in a desperate situation because 3 of us were nearing our 80th birthdays. And we'd been praying for a while now, for years now, that the Lord would send us someone to just take over the church. I was, in a way, the church leader, but I didn't want to be, and nobody else would take it over. And we were really in a desperate situation. And then one day, after a desperate prayer meeting, I got a phone call from a friend of our church, and he gave me the name of Mike Bradley and a phone number, and just said, "Phone him." And I didn't, because I thought, he's American, and I said, he might be a cult, but don't know, you see. So anyhow, I told the church, and I told them to start praying about whether I should ring this Mike Bradley or not. Well, a few months went by and there was no response from them. And then one Sunday evening, one of the members from church came and handed me a piece of card. And on the card was the name Mike Bradley and a phone number. And underneath was written, "Please get in touch with this man." And I thought, it's the same one. What do I do? But I said, it just happened that that night we had a young speaker at our church, and he was called Andrew. And I said, he came across to say good night. And just as he was talking to me, he got his eye on this piece of card that I had in my hand. It felt like a piece of lead. I couldn't leave it, let go of it. And I said, he turned to it and he says, oh, Doreen, Mike Bradley, I know this man. Bye, he's a good one. Ring him. So I came home. I gave him a hug, first of all, because I felt as though it was just the Lord telling us. So I hugged him and said, hey, thank you. And I came home and I thought, you know, what do I do? And then I got a phone call from my sister. And she said, hey, we've had a wonderful speaker at our church today. And I said, oh, who was he? She said, oh, he was an American called Mike Bradley. So immediately I just picked the phone up and phoned him. And he came in to visit me. And I said, I think I fell in love with him straight away. I said, it was lovely. And I said, he's come to our church. I said, and we love him to bits.
First of all, you know, we sing that song, To God Be the Glory. You know, everything you saw there, it was a God thing. And even on some of the repairs, when I put like the eaves and all that, we went into a church, and it's not in a very attractive area. In fact, right next to us is like automobile garages, or garages, sorry, repair shops.
It's more interesting.
Yes. Garages, yes, brilliant. You know, everything about this said, you know, this probably wouldn't be the best place to be able to do a church replant, but it was extremely obvious that this was a whole God thing. Our conclusion at Ford Mission and all, kind of our introduction, if you would, to the northern culture, which is different, and then making connections with Bethany City Church. The gentleman in the blue is the one that would have just probably, be concluding there, took the message tonight. A godly man is more of an evangelist than a pastor, and actually he has a regular job, and then he preaches, and he's available for a lot of local churches. But a lot of those things, it was God working through a majority of people. And you know, you read in Acts chapter 16 where there's the Macedonian call, you know, and then we see that. Well, that actually is what happened, and it happens all the time around the world. It's not just there in England, how God is calling people to be part of God's kingdom plan. And it's nothing about our personalities or our stature or even our education. God is constantly working in people's lives throughout the context of His world. And we and you just have to be a little part of it. Where you live, where I live, where people live throughout this globe, as the gospel is going out, as people's hearts are being changed, we're just a little bit of this tapestry of God's amazing rollout of the kingdom, which perhaps in a few years or many years will come to a conclusion. And I think about all the specifics, how God allowed us to be part of that. And even as we begin to repair that old building, which hadn't been touched in about 30 years, it was very much probably set in the 1970s. But even all of that money, you know, when someone gave the church, someone I don't even know, gave the church £2,000, which is a lot of money, because they knew that the church needed to be fixed up. Someone else gave a smaller amount of money when we started pulling out the asphalt. Our little church building looked like an industrial building. It was just horrible. It was just really, really ugly. It still is not the most sightly, but we've improved quite a bit. And even as we were putting in the lawn, the locals that I were beginning to get to know, someone said, oh, don't do that. The locals were going to, they'll steal your roll down turf. And I thought, people wouldn't do that. They did. They tried to steal our turf. It's a very rough area. And so we just, you know, we prayed about it. And then when we put in a garden a little bit later on, they said, oh, don't put in the plants and a tree. Why are you putting in a nice tree like that? That's why I put a tree. They said, the locals will come and they'll steal it. They'll just, nick it, if you would. We used that word earlier. They'll nick it out of the front garden. None of our garden has been touched. And then when we put the gutters up, there was a lady, an elderly lady who was a cancer survivor, and she said, don't take any of the money out of the treasure. You give me all of the bills, and we'll pay that. That's my way to say thank you to God for Him giving, that's Ruth, a continuance of life. So all of that was paid for. So just amazing, all of these things. And then there was a crew from First Baptist West Sacramento. West Sacramento, Gary Clements, you may know the name at least. But that's a family. I know the pastor, the pastor's wife, those children, some of them were my teenagers. And it was, anyway, amazing to have them there and what they did in a very, very long day. I was a taskmaster. I said the reward. They were with us for 4 days coming back from a mission trip to Africa. And they said, we just want to come and we want to serve. And, you know, what can we do? So I have a reward day and a work day. And the work day was hard. It was really, really hard. But we painted a huge section of the building. I put graffiti because there was graffiti on it. It was just very, very ugly looking masonry. And in the very next day, I drove by and I thought the graffiti is going to go back up. It's just that kind of an area. Not one bit of graffiti. Then we added on to the garden. All these things are God's way of extending His kingdom. I'll just say a little bit more, and then I think my time will conclude about right. So all of this was happening. It's been a process. It's only been 18, 19 months, so not a long period of time for an awful lot of things to come together. In that particular area of Sunderland, they haven't seen the hand of God in it for probably centuries. And God's bringing people out of the neighborhood. We, by faith, we started, it's like a book. Is a book read, and I can't tell you all the details, but I'll tell you just enough to where you get the idea. It was called By This Name, which was like the A to Z, what it means to follow Jesus. And we promoted this, and within very short order, we had like 23 or 25 people. This was like toward the beginning, when we just had 7 people. 23 who were coming from the neighborhoods, people were bringing their friends, and if you are familiar with the title Stranger on the Road to Emmaus, which was greatly used in U.S. churches and around the world, it's kind of like the upgrade of that. So we have 25 of us, and we're reading a book together. I have an educator who's part of that, and they're thoroughly engrossed as they're learning that God keeps His word and how all of the stories of the Old Testament lead to Jesus. And this educator, he said, we need to meet up and have a cup of coffee. And this was probably about 5 or 6 weeks into this book read. And he said, I'm a principal of a school. What you're doing is not supposed to work. You know, for 25 people, many of which are unchurched folk, to be reading a book about the Bible in the north of England, you know, this crowd should have just tapered off very quickly. But instead it was growing. And he said, whatever you're doing, God is in it. So that went to others, and I can't give all the details because it'd take me a while, but one to another, just connecting with people, starting a guitar club there so I can connect to people who are musical but not necessarily godly. Some of them I've come to love quite dearly, and some of them who've gone from atheist to agnostic, who may come to some of our activities. The children's club, still small. It's an Awana. We're the only Awana Club in the whole northeast of England. What honor is that? Or hard work is that? So we have 8 to 12. We've done holiday Bible clubs. We've done all kinds of things. I don't know. I know you have that barbecuer out there. So our main service is a Sunday night service. It's a 5 o'clock service, and it just works well in that particular neighborhood with our people. We do our Awana Club on Sunday morning. But from beginning of June through all of August, just so people knew that we were on the planet and part of this estate, we had a barbecue after the service every single Sunday. Now, does Pastor Doug do that? I'm not saying you had to, but that was literally, that is very American. Barbecue is very American, but if you could imagine, you're seeing the plants, you're seeing the grass, you're seeing a building, you're seeing more cars than had been there in over a decade, and now you're smelling barbecue, and you're seeing people kind of out on the street. Obviously, they have no idea of a service, but you know, many, many different things to make the Bible or the possibility of the Bible or the possibility of Christianity and a real Jesus who loves the people in that community come to their heart. That is what we're about. And when I go back, that's what we'll be about as well. In just about 2 weeks, the public school, a couple of classes from 2 elementary or primary schools are coming into our building, and we're going to show them the gospel of Jesus. And it fulfills an educational responsibility that the schools have to have, but it allows us to bring about 90 to 120 children in who probably wouldn't come to our Awana Club, but just to introduce them to people that Jesus knew. We have about 8 people, and they'll be dressing in character and just talk about how they met this man Jesus back in the Bible times and how Jesus had changed their life. And so it's just a subtle but culturally appropriate way to share the gospel within that setting. And this church was going to sell its building several weeks ago, or 2 years ago, 2017, they were going to close the fellowship and sell the building. And yet God is continuing to do a work in this region of Sunderland, and that's what the Bradleys are about. But that's probably exactly what your other missionaries are about in their parts of the world. And that's what you should be about here as you're planted in Redmond. You know, thinking missional. You know, how am I part of this big tapestry? It may seem huge, it may seem little, but it's important in every single thread.